to episode 55 of the DFA podcast. I'm your host, Brian Grosnick, and joining me, as always, my co-host, RJ Anderson. RJ, what's going on with you?
I have a knee issue. There's some labor strife there between my body and my knee, and otherwise, just hanging in there.
Yeah, I think we were a little concerned that it might have put you on the 10-day DL or something and wiped you out from today's episode. So joining us in addition to RJ and in addition to producer Sean Brody, who will be joining us in the second half of the show, we have another baseball prospectus writer, Zach Kreiser, one of our favorite writers over at the site. Zach, how are you doing?
Good. I don't know what to call myself. I'm usually a pinch hitter on this podcast.
I know. Now we've got a full infield, I guess, since we've got four folks on the show between Sean and RJ and myself and you. So I don't know what positions we'd all fit in at. I'll give you first choice, I guess.
I'll just be the shifted second baseman who's standing way out in the outfield for nothing to happen.
All right. Sounds good. So what does that make you, RJ?
I can't move, so I have to be the first baseman. Or if I play shortstop, you know, we could. Never mind. We're not going to get into it more.
Sean, you can. Sean, do you want to be shortstop or do you want to be third base? We'll end this quick.
Oh, since I'm a terrible fielder and have bad reaction times, third base.
I thought you were.
That makes no sense.
I thought you were a strong PFP participant, according to your Twitter bio.
I do have two PFP championships, defending champion, though defending might be nicer than anything, but yeah.
All right. Well, we have officially run the gauntlet of useless taxonomy of who would play where in the infield. That's great, everyone. Nice start. Good start to this show. Let's go into what I would consider the biggest move of the past week or so since we've had our last show. We have a couple of interesting major league moves, a couple of signings, one DL issue, a lot of minor league players. But I think the biggest move of the last week or so was the fact that Tim Lincecum has come back. And not only has he come back, but it looks like he's got a major league deal. So, RJ, I'll let you kick it off. What do you think about Tim Lincecum's comeback and where he's going to fit in with the much talked about on this show, Texas Rangers?
Kick it off, Brian, really?
Yeah.
Save the punts for the professionals.
Kick it.
It's an interesting signing. Obviously, you know, Lincecum hasn't had much big league success as of late, but you see some of the video, some of the pictures of him out there, and it seems like he's really worked hard at improving his body and obviously worked with Kyle Bodie and the Driveline crew, and his velocity, I believe, was up to the 93-95 range, I think I saw. He hasn't appeared in a game because of a death in the family, so haven't seen him for myself beyond, you know, those little Twitter videos or clips or whatever. That said, it's an interesting situation in general in Texas because they're supposedly going to run out of six-man rotation. They have two relievers trying to transition to the rotation, and Mike Minor and Matt Bush, who has started one game in his entire career, and it was a two-inning stint. So don't really know how any of that's going to work out. I guess it makes sense then to bring in Lincecum as a flyer in the bullpen and see if he can perhaps, you know, conjure some magic and become an average or better reliever. But I don't really know what the chances of that are.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure there's this is exactly what you would call a stable rotation. Zach, tell me a little bit about what you think about the Lincecum comeback and maybe just the Rangers rotation and pitching staff in general kind of associated with that.
Well, look, I hope Lincecum is as advertised, kind of with, you know, you've seen a lot of pump coming up, mainly out of the Driveline camp, about how much he has built up his arm again, and he's got some of the stuff back that had abandoned him. I don't think he was ever working with, you know, insane control and command. I think he was always, you know, a very stuff-based pitcher. And so if he has some of that back, maybe even in just shorter outings and smaller stints, he can make it work as a reliever. The Rangers rotation is just it seems like they threw everything up in the air and they haven't started juggling it yet. the Angels are going to a six-man rotation, and it was like the second day of camp, I think. You know, all the pitchers went into a room and then white smoke puffed out and they came out and everyone was on board with a six-man rotation. And the Rangers are having quotes come out from Cole Hamels, just like disavowing the idea of a six-man rotation. Doug Fister said something much softer that still didn't seem thrilled about the six-man rotation. And even though, I mean, every sign points to them doing that, and Jeff Banister has said things that make it sound like they're going six-man rotation. It's just a very strange situation. I don't know if it's something where they're letting Matt Bush and Mike Minor kind of try, and then one of them will fail and get shifted back into the bullpen or something like that, kind of like how the Yankees said they were giving Chad Green a chance to start. You know, it may be some sort of personnel thing there where it's not going to work out. Anyway, I don't know what they're doing. If they're going to try for a six-man rotation, it seems like they need to do some cattle herding and get everyone kind of going the same direction.
I think it's really weird that the Rangers are so committed to this idea of a six-man rotation, because given the structure of their pitching staff at this point, I can't think of a team that's maybe less equipped to run a six-man rotation at this point. I see this as a team with a lot of guys who would be good once or twice through the order. If you wanted to get weird with this pitching rotation, why not do the tandem starter thing with like Minor and Bush, or with Cologne and Tim Lincecum, or Cologne and Jesse Chavez, and do a five-man rotation with some paired starters rather than six-man rotation and be like, well, we got to find a place for Matt Bush or Jesse Chavez in this rotation. That seems really weird to me. I don't know what you guys think.
No, I agree with that. You're right. And, you know, the reason people used to say you don't run out six-man rotations is because it's hard enough finding five quality starting pitchers. Well, the Rangers, it's been hard finding two or three. You know, their entire rotation is basically one giant question mark. I mean, Hamels was not his old self last year. Matt Moore hasn't been his old self in years. Doug Fister obviously had a good run of success, but who knows how sustainable that is. Then you get to Bush Minor, and we're completely off the rails before you even talk about Bartolo Colon, who was one of the worst pitchers in baseball last season. And it's not like he's at an age where you expect a bounce back. So, yeah, it's a rough situation. I don't really know what their thought is there, other than maybe they hope they can keep someone like Hamels healthier, someone like Moore healthier, and maybe that'll have benefits. But I agree that it's an unusual situation and not the strategy I thought they would embrace.
Well, I think they did a weird thing where they signed like eight guys who you would look at and say he could be the fifth starter, or he could be a fallback plan and be a really good reliever. They just have like eight of those and no relievers or starters. So they're trying to build something out of that.
Yeah, I think that if you only have one good starting pitcher, it's not a great plan to let's just do whatever we can to piss him off. Like, I think that's the wrong tack to take if you're management of the Texas Rangers. But what do I know? So, Zach, I want to go back to you real quickly and talk about the Rangers in the context of the American League West. Do you think this team is going to be – I mean, everyone pretty much thinks the Astros are going to run away with the division. But do you think that this is a team that could contend for second place, that could give the Astros a run for their money, that'll be involved in the wild card picture, or do you think that they're just too far away at this point?
No, I think they're, I think the Angels are probably the second best team in that division pretty clearly. And I like the A's a lot more than the Rangers right now. At least the Mariners are all sorts of injured and problem filled, but the A's, at least you can look at most of their guys and say, you know, the swings are likely to be upward. And the Rangers, it's, I mean, maybe Joey Gallo takes another step forward. Maybe Yurickson Profar plays baseball. But the everything else is kind of, it's either going to regress or stay the same. And it's really hard to figure out where they're going to get that bump that they need to overtake a sort of weird, crowded wildcard picture that's really only going to be for one spot. I mean, you're looking at the Yankees and Red Sox, and they're going to one of them's going to take one wild card. And then you're looking at the Twins and the Angels and just a bunch of any overachievement from the Rays or Jays or White Sox or A's, or all of those teams theoretically have some outside chance of making a run, and all of them seem to have more upward mobility than the Rangers, which is kind of what gets me on the Rangers.
So real quickly, you would have the AL West 1-5. You'd have the Astros first, the Angels second, and then
the A's third, and then Mariners, and then Rangers probably.
All right, RJ, give me your take on that.
I think he's pretty much dead on. I might be higher on the A's than a lot of people. I see a really good young lineup there, or potentially good young lineup there. I think the odds are one or two of those starting pitchers will work out, just because, you know, it seems like that's the kind of thing that always works out for the A's every, you know, what, 3 or 4 years. And the bullpen could be pretty interesting. And yeah, I'm a starting pitching guy. So I look at the Rangers and I see an absolute mess. I look at the Angels and I see at least a little bit more potential. And I like their offseason. So I guess if I'm ranking them 1-5, I would go, you know, you can't really pick against the Astros at this point. So Astros, then probably Angels. Yeah, I guess I'd have to go A's, Mariners, Rangers. But I'm not really confident about the bottom three like I am with the top two, I guess.
Yeah, I know. The top two are the easy part. It's not fun to be confident that the Astros and the Angels are the two best teams in the West. All right, I'm of the opposite side of things. I do not have a lot of faith in this Athletics team. I do like some of the young guys that they have in the lineup. I think the addition of Piscotty is going to be pretty good. I like Matt Chapman a lot. I'm a little concerned about his injury, and I'm not sure how he's going to respond to that. But you guys dig on the Rangers for their rotation, and like I'm looking at the Athletics rotation of, you know, Kendall Graveman as the number one guy and Daniel Mengden as the number three guy. And I don't believe that Paul Blackburn exists, but he's penciled in as the number five starter right now. And yeah, I know they have younger guys who are in the minors who are probably going to work their way in sometime, whether it's Grant Holmes or Jarrell Cotton, who has broken my heart too many times to be trusted. I really like the Rangers lineup, and I think it's by far the best lineup out of those three contenders in the American League West. You know, Elvis Andrews might actually be a legit number two hitter now. Gallo could take a step forward. Mazzara could take a step forward. We're yet to see what Willie Calhoun's going to do in the major leagues. Rougui Odor can't possibly be as bad as he was last year. So, yeah, the Rangers don't have a pitching staff and literally zero depth in their bench and a terrible bullpen. But like you guys said, the Mariners are really no great shakes. And, you know, Ichiro might be starting in the outfield for the Mariners, which is not great. And Mike Ford might be the starting first baseman, which is not great. And the Athletics just don't jump out at me. So I kind of have the Rangers still as the number three team in this division, with the Mariners at four and the Athletics at five.
I'm just going to say I'm very disappointed that you did not mention Andrew Triggs at all during that rant, because that was one of our first shows obsessing over Andrew Triggs. But yeah, that's a fair point. And like I said, you know, there's some hope and prayer with the A's rotation, and that, you know, one of those young starters will be able to take a step forward. And I think Mengden has the potential to be that guy. Whether he does or not, I don't know. But yeah, I think there's some potential there. And I do like their lineup, I think, more than you like their lineup. I think Matt Chapman could be an all-star caliber player. You know, he's like an elite-level defender at third base, has the potential to be a league average or better stick. Olsen, I don't know if he's going to – I do know that he's probably not going to hit 25 home runs in what it was, like 80-something games again. However, I think he can be a positive contributor. And you look at the rest of their lineup, and there's really only two spots that I would identify as potential weaknesses, and that's behind the plate and then in center field, because I'm not really a believer in Boog Powell. That said, they have Dustin Fowler on the way. They have Jorge Mateo they could throw out there at some point. So I think they're going to hit for a fair amount of power. And, you know, Stephen Piscotty seemed like a pretty smart and savvy acquisition. So, yeah, I think I'm probably higher on the A's than you are. Lower on the Rangers because, I mean, you know, you went through it. I think you were kind of talking yourself out of it a little bit when you're like, you know, they don't have a pitching staff and they don't have depth. And, you know, other than that, though, it's a great-looking team.
but they got dingers, man. They got dingers.
I was going to say, Willie Calhoun and Nomar Mazzara, I like both of them. I'm fully on the bandwagon for both of them. But, man, if they lose any one person out of the lineup, it just gets dark. But
you don't believe
Tachi and Ryan Rua, and oh, that's about it. I will say the A's rotation also features Sean Manaea, who I think got better last year despite the numbers saying he didn't. I think he was making progress and maybe getting dinged by some luck issues. And AJ Puck, you know, he was a college arm. The reports from spring training have been glowing about him. I could see him showing up in, I don't know, July or August and making a little bit of a difference.
Yeah, and he looks like an elf, so that's got to be a positive, right?
That's important. That's important to note. Yeah, I didn't bring Manea up because I really like Manea too, and he completely undercut my point that I hate the age rotation. So that was most of that. And I didn't bring Triggs up because, well, I knew you would, RJ, so there was no need to. All right, great. So the AL West looks like a complete cluster at the bottom of the division, but at least we can all agree that the Astros are the best team there. The Angels are the second best team there. The rest of the division is TBD. And hey, one day, perhaps Alex Cobb or Lance Lynn or Jake Arrieta will sign with one of those three teams. And I think that would dramatically change my opinion on any level. Like if the A's brought in Alex Cobb on like a 1-year pillow contract or a 2-year deal, and then, you know, just look to maybe swap him at some point, then yeah, I might move the A's up to three. Or if the Rangers get crazy and sign a real starting pitcher, then yeah, you could get behind them, I think. And you know, the Mariners, it's the same situation, but they're the Mariners, so they'll make three trades before we have our next show, and you know, nothing will be quite the same.
In theory, the A's could sign Lynn and Cobb to 1-year, $15 million apiece deals, and their payroll would be like what, $80 million?
Yeah. That's right. Huh.
The A's should sign Jonathan Lucroy or just any catcher. Any catcher.
Yeah. Yeah, the Maxwell Fegley platoon does not look really good at this point. I had them on Chris Iannetta before the offseason started. I thought that would have been a really good fit for them, but nobody listens to me.
No.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for the we expanded off Tim Lincecum to cover the entire American League West. I think that was a pretty good job there. But we have more things to talk about, more deals, more moves, so we're going to bring in Sean now to walk us through our batting practice segment and let us hit some of the other minor moves that have gone on around the league over the last few days. So, Sean, whenever you're ready.
So we have an extension to start with. Paul DeJong, 6 years, $26 million guaranteed. That's 4.33 average annual value. He'll be signed from 2018 to 2023. He is 24 now, and in 2024 he has an option for $12.5 million. And in 2025, he has an option for $15 million. So those are age 31 and 32 seasons. So this is a steal for Paul DeJong, isn't it?
Well, it depends on your perspective. I guess I would say I was very surprised by this because initially the report was that they had signed him to a 6-year extension and there weren't any options, you know, when it was initially reported. And that just covered their team control. So it seemed odd to guarantee him $24 million unless you really, really, really buy into him. And, you know, the skill set is kind of odd. He's, you don't see shortstops who are basically power above everything else at the plate. He strikes out a lot, doesn't really walk much. You're basically relying on him making consistent hard contact in order to have any kind of real offensive value. And, you know, there's reasons to believe maybe he can get better. He shot through the minor leagues and, you know, I think he had like 50 games at AAA. So he was, you know, very aggressively promoted. I'm still a little surprised, but I think it's a fine deal. Even if DeJong just becomes like a bench player, utility guy or whatever, that's kind of a trifling amount of money. And obviously it's a life-changing amount of money for him, so good for him. But yeah, I was surprised to see the Cardinals do this.
I'm going to insult him first, but then explain why I really like him. But he hit more home runs than he took walks last year. That's really difficult to do. Anyway, yeah, he only walked 21 times and he had 25 homers. When I looked at him when I wrote the under 25 list for the Cardinals prospect assessment at BP, and I spent a long time looking at him trying to figure out if his really bad plate discipline was going to totally sink him or not. And I kind of came away thinking that he might be some sort of light version of a Daniel Murphy type. The way he makes contact is it sustains a very high BABIP. He's going to put the ball right over the top of the infielders and drop it in a whole lot, and then sometimes he's going to hit a home run. But I think you can pretty safely project the power down some, but I'm not sure that his rate of getting on base or rate of getting hits is going to go down that much. And so if you're looking at a 275, 310 guy with some power who can theoretically, at least they think, play shortstop, I think the Cardinals like to lock their guys up and maybe see if that helps them develop more. And in terms of looking forward for them, I think Paul DeJong's a pretty good investment.
I was really surprised to see Pecota project him for 29 homers this year. That was really shocking to me. I know he hit 25 in relatively, just 108 games last year. But, Pecota tends to be a little bit more on the conservative side. And the system still thinks that he's going to slug close to 500, still going to hit all these home runs. I wonder if any of the ball issues that may or may not be going on, and we may not have the same juiced ball this year as we did last year, might have some sort of effect on his power. Or, the other way is that now that he's established himself in the league and proven that he can be somewhat of a home run threat, I wonder if pitchers are going to start pitching him differently, and then we might see the walk rate go up a little bit. I'm not as sure about that, but I think that's something we could consider.
Yeah, that's fair. Just to follow up on Zach's point about how rare it is to see more home runs than walks, last season there were 9 instances, and I think it's kind of funny because 2 of them were Royals, Moustakas and Perez. One of them was a New York Met, Wilmer Flores, who, that makes sense. And then one of them was Tim Anderson, who DeJong's new deal actually bumps as the most guaranteed to a player with less than a full year of major league service time. So that's a nice little synchronicity there. But my point is, there was actually, again, 9 of those last year. The season before that, there was 6. And the season before that, there was about 6. So for whatever reason, last year, and I guess we can basically say it's probably the baseball. Last year was the year for this, as weird as that is.
It's also a little weird to hear that there are multiple shortstops on that list, because you don't really always think of the shortstop position as the, that's where the guy hits a bunch of homers and refuses to walk.
Right. It's like, Sean Rodriguez, when he was coming up, I looked into his strikeout rate, his power numbers, and there was only really one guy who struck out a lot at shortstop, and that was Ian Desmond. And now it seems like it's becoming more of an accepted trait. And I guess it speaks to the evolution of ball players. It used to be your shortstop would be, maybe a little thinner or whatever, because he had to run, he had to have the range. And nowadays, I guess they're so good at adding muscle while retaining their explosive ability, their quick twitch muscles and all that, that you can have these guys who can go out there and slug like they're, second baseman or third baseman, and yet they can still play a passable shortstop. So it's pretty cool in a sense.
So one quick thing, does anyone project that the next Cardinal to get a long-term extension, despite not so much a track record of success in the past, are we going to get a Jose Martinez extension at some point, or are we going to see, Greg Garcia get locked up? What's happening next, do you think, for the Cardinals?
I think Jose Martinez is too old for that, probably, but
he's also not that good. So that would be a mistake, I feel like.
Okay, that's not my take. I think he's old, so I don't think he's a great extension candidate. But, if the pattern holds, I'm thinking, isn't it Max Schrock is down in their minor league system? Let's just wait for him to come up, and he'll get an extension immediately.
Wow. That's
– I was gonna say Tommy Pham, but I think we're going with, not obvious. So what about Carson Kelly? Give him some money. Make him happy about being Molina's – successor,
Caddy.
even if he's the backup for the next 2 or 3 seasons, that's a little easier to stomach if you're making more than the league minimum. But
I'm gonna trot out this theory on this podcast for the second time, but I think whenever they get fed up with Matheny, and if Molina happens to be hurt at that time, new player manager Yadier Molina plays twice a week, manages the team.
I want to see that happen, actually. I don't know why the Molina brothers haven't gotten a managerial shot, other than, the biases and how they hire managers, because those guys, you'll bring them in as an instructor, but you won't give them a chance to manage the game, even though you give that chance to seemingly every other former catcher, Mike Redmond and Kevin Cashman. You can't tell me these guys are, somehow special and the Molina brothers don't know what they're doing or whatever. But that's a tangent for a different show.
That's absolutely true. So, yeah, I would love to see the player manager. I would love to see Molina, you know, don the tools of ignorance, but also write the lineup. I think that'd be a lot of fun. Anything else we should go over before we kick it to another Missouri team?
No.
All right, take it away, Sean.
Okay, so Lucas Duda signed with the Kansas City Royals, 1 year, $3.5 million guaranteed. Now he can get up to $1.3 million in incentives, so it's 300 plate appearances, he gets $100,000, and then for every 25 trips after that, he gets another $100,000. So all told, he can max out at $4.8 million, but last year Lucas Duda earned $7.2 million. So how is Lucas Duda on this deal with a Royals team that did not have a clear first baseman?
Well, I think it starts with he had not a great second half in Tampa Bay, and it ends with teams are colluding to drive down players' salaries, and the corner bat market is flush. So yep, that's about where that goes, I'm afraid.
I assume his durability played into this too, and you know, he's someone who's missed. I mean, he missed almost all of 2016, and he didn't – I think he played in, what, 120, 130 games in two of the last three seasons. So he's not necessarily a guy you're going to – and granted, you know, some of that's artificially deflated because of the lack of a DH. So I don't know. This is a good deal for the Royals. As long as he's healthy, he's likely to at least reach base and mash some. And, yeah, I mean, I don't really know what the negative is here because you figure he's probably going to be on the move at the deadline, and – if last year's acquisition cost is any hint, he's going to bring back an okay relief prospect, which isn't great. But, you know, why wouldn't you go out there and make this deal if you're the Royals?
Yeah. So, Zach, I have a quick question for you about Lucas Duda. Is he the best hitter on the Royals?
I mean, Pakoda thinks so. But I'm not – I guess in terms of pure hitting, yeah, he probably is. He's – oh, man, he's ideally a platoon bat kind of. But, yeah, I mean, I think if you see him moved at the deadline, he's going to be put into a platoon. That's kind of how it's going to work, right? That's his ideal situation. But, yeah, at the moment, he's the best hitter. I think Whit Merrifield is still probably likely to outproduce him. But not in the same, not all with the bat. It'll be, you know, some running and things like that. But here's the thing. The Royals, you could have looked at them, and I think a lot of people expected them to just sign Logan Morrison, who wanted to play there. Mm-hmm. And they didn't do that. And so once that happened, I think it was like, okay, well, they're just going to, despite not having many ready first base types that, you know, they can plug in there and see what they've got, they were going to try it anyway and have like Chesler, Cuthbert and Hunter Dozier in the lineup at the same time, which doesn't seem terribly necessary, but that seemed like what they were going to do. And then now they've got Duda. They've got this one respectable hitter against a certain handedness of pitcher. And then they'll rotate their prospect types through third base. But then they also have Alcides Escobar blocking Raul Mondesi. It's a weird mix. I'm guessing they do plan to accumulate some guys and trade off at the deadline more and then get their young guys a better shot. But it's a weird-looking plan.
My hope is still for Jorge Solar to become what we thought he could become. He's entering his age 26 season, and you know, he has the approach. He has some past success. I mean, his career true average in nearly 900 plate appearances is .267. So that's not too bad. Not ideal for a guy who's, you know, a corner outfielder, but I don't think most people would recognize him as being above average, you know, for his career as a hitter. And, you know, just to throw out, Lucas Duda has a .295 true average for his career. So, you know, they're not that close, but I don't know. I could see Solar breaking out a little bit, but otherwise, yeah, it's got to be Duda or Merrifield because this lineup is very, very bad.
And Solar, you mentioned his .267 true average over his career, which isn't bad. No. His true average last year was a little bit lower than that. It was he had a .144, .245, .258 triple slash line, which ends up
lower.
At a .172 true average, which is I can't think of a good enough adjective to describe how awful that is. It's I don't know. It's like a Saw movie. But the The other thing about this Royals lineup that's kind of weird, I think, is that Duda gives the team maybe two left-handed hitters. It's him and Alex Gordon and Ryan Goins, who does not qualify as a hitter on the 25-man roster, I think. And Goins is actually an NRI, so I guess that's not even true. So this is a team that's going to be very, very light against right-handed pitchers, which I believe are still – there's still more of those than left-handed pitchers. So I'm not picking the Royals to be above fourth place in this Central, and I'm not sure they're better than the White Sox at this point.
I don't think close to the White Sox.
Yeah. The White Sox have more – no, I think the White Sox have a lot more room for growth too. Plus, you know, they have – you know, they have – arguably the best pitching coach in the majors. They also have Don Cooper. They have Dave Duncan. And yes, that was a James Shields reference for those.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Hey, but yeah, I think this White Sox team, I don't think they're going to be good or anything, but there's certainly some interesting parts there. And, you know, they even added some parts to their bullpen. Joaquin Soria is better than who they had closing at the end of last season, which was Juan Minaya. I've had multiple writers reach out to me and say, you know, as like a quiz thing, like, you know who was closing games for the White Sox at the end of last season? I'm like, yeah, it was Juan Minaya. They're like, how did you know that? And I was like, well, you know, I'm the idiot who watches White Sox games in September to hear Hawk Harrelson's lovely, lovely voice. So, yeah, I would agree that the White Sox are going to be better. They're going to finish in third. I think the Tigers and the Royals are both just absolutely miserable, and they're not going to – there's no way they're going to grow because their farm system's not probably going to produce – anything of, you know, value in the short term, especially the Royals. The Royal system is awful.
You know, it's funny because you had almost talked me into it, but around the end of when you were speaking, I looked up the White Sox roster resource page.
Yeah.
And we still have in their starting lineup Lurie Garcia, Yolmer Sanchez, Nicky Delmonico, and Charlie Tilson. And I don't buy it. I know Yolmer is coming up. I know that Nicky Delmonico had a good season last year, but those are not real baseball players. Those are AAA players, which, I mean, to be fair, so are most of the Detroit Tigers and the Royals. So I guess that's something.
I think the trick with the White Sox is all of the outfielders are just interchangeable. It might start with Charlie Tilson or Adam Engel, whoever that is, but it could easily be Ryan Cordell by like April 20th, and he might be better, or it will be whoever is performing better and needs a shot at the majors. And you've got the Matt Davidson, Nicky Delmonico tandem of weirdness that might turn out okay. And so you're looking at a bunch of pieces that could easily be swapped out for pieces that look better, which is at least more promising than whatever the Royals are doing.
Yeah. And Adam Engel, for those who don't know him either, he could go get it in center field. The problem is he can't hit an eighth of a lick, and he's been reworking his swing, and maybe it'll work. Probably not, because I don't think he's ever going to hit. But if you just, you know, if you want to look up his highlights, the dude can really go get it. I mean, he's, let's put it this way, he's a professional outmaker. Whether he's at the plate or in the field, he is a professional outmaker. So kudos to him.
Well struck. I'm really interested to see how Charlie Tilson's going to get injured this season. It's really disappointing because I'd love to see him healthy and on the field for like a season. I have no faith that he's going to stay upright. And we're going to go back to having this White Sox all Garcia outfield of Avisail, Lurie, and Willie. And if that's the case, then it's great from a naming perspective and a terrible situation from an offensive production standard.
I will say, though, they could potentially bring up Jimenez this season. Bring up Cordell, Jimenez. I don't know.
I'm in the tank
for Cordell, so I want to see him. But yeah,
I'd want to slow play Jimenez for sure, because I do think that they want to be looking towards a long term success with him. And you know, you gotta keep those service times down artificially, if for no other reason. Because with this starting rotation, it's, you know, third place in the Central is probably the ceiling that you've got right now. I mean,
absolutely.
I don't want to diminish James Shields too much for fear that you'll hunt me down. But like, you know, this is this is not a good scene in the rotation. And, you know, it, I think they're at least a year or two from, you know, even contending for a wild card spot. So as I think I ripped Brody for this, like, last year, like, oh God, the White Sox are not even close. And now I'm getting a little bit more behind him, but it was really just an excuse to rip Brody. So I feel bad.
Miguel Gonzalez is one of my favorites too. So you actually two fifths of the rotation, you just tore my heart to shred. I will say though, you know, there is room for improvement here. If Giolito comes out there and is improved, I mean, Ronaldo Lopez has an interesting arm. I don't know what the status of Carlos Rodon is, but I don't know. I'm not saying they're going to be good, but I think that's at least an interesting team. And you have Kopech a level away, potentially. You have Carson Fulmer if he ever turns into anything. They're not running Dylan Covey out there. Let's put it that way. So that is a huge upgrade. And they have some other prospects who are only two levels away, Hanson and Dunning. And then, you know, maybe Cease works his way into the conversation for the end of next season. I don't know. I think there's more talent here than we're giving them credit for. By just saying, you know, yeah, they're a bad team. Let's not beat around the bush here. They're going to finish in third, though, because A, they're not trying to lose like the other two teams, and B, they have young talent on the way, and at least some of that young talent will probably work out.
I think we've seen this recently, too. I mean, the Brewers of last year are an extreme example, but when you have just a mass of talent that you can let things bubble to the top, you end up with the chance to come out and surprise and make people feel good maybe a year ahead of when you're supposed to. And I think the White Sox could approach 500 this year if things go right, which is still not getting them anywhere close to the postseason. But I think they can approach 500 this year if things go right. And then I think they'll be a player for in next year's market. And I think they'll kind of be a wild card contender next year, to be honest.
So I was just going to say, I'm just going to close this out with one note that I picked up. They've added Wellington Castillo this year, whose nickname is Beef, and they're probably going to be batting him ahead of the lineup to Nicky Delmonico, which is another cut of beef. So if nothing else, we've got some great, you know, steak-related puns that we can roll out all season long.
So, Brian, I think what I said to you was 2018 wild card. Yeah, I don't feel so good about that.
No, you shouldn't.
I did when we were in Arizona for a tournament last weekend. We got to see the White Sox and Reds play. Their bullpen might be a lot better than I think we realized. Nate Jones, coming off of Tommy John by like 7 months, was hitting 95, 96, and he looked really good. And if you look at his stats for the last couple of years before that injury, he was a very good pitcher. And so I think him, Joaquin Soria pitched very well last year. That might be a sneaky good bullpen. And they had a sneaky good bullpen last year, too. So maybe they're good at developing those arms. I don't know how much that actually helps them because their rotation is still pretty bad. Ronaldo Lopez pitched that day, and he walked the yard. But, I mean, the bullpen is at least interesting.
No, I disagree completely. RJ, you watched some Rays games last year. Xavier Cedeno and Danny Farcar are in this White Sox bullpen. What do you think of those two guys?
You watched some Rays games last year. Jesus, Brian, you're just the one at me today. Cedeno is kind of a bullfox type, and that he's got guts and he's got wits. He doesn't have a ton of great stuff, and he's coming off an injury, so I don't really know what he's going to look like. But I see him being an okay second lefty with Farquhar. You know, he does the stair stepping. You know, he's up in the zone of the fastball, low with the split change, whatever it is he throws. And I don't know what he's gonna do. I don't know. He's pretty bad in Tampa, but that doesn't really necessarily mean anything because, you know, I don't know. I would say that the bullpen will be. I like Nate Jones. I think Brody is absolutely right that Nate Jones can be underrated, and if he stays healthy, he's certainly gonna gain some fans. But he's also 32 and staying healthy has been problematic for him, so I'm not quite sure how certain that is.
If he stays healthy, he's going to be on a different team in July.
You think so? Because he did sign an extension with the White Sox, which I guess that makes him more appealing to other teams.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I guess I could see that. Man, you're a buzzkill, Brian. And you mentioned Saul again. You haven't even seen Saul.
I know. Look, I got one. I have like one or two jokes, and I'm just going to keep hitting them over and over again.
So I said Nate Jones and Tommy John. He had nerve reposition surgery. So,
oh, that's better than Tommy John.
Yeah. So from one basically platoon bat to another potential platoon bat. Adam Lind signed a minor league deal with the Yankees. Adam Lind signed a minor league deal with the Yankees. He is coming off one of the best seasons, not one of the best seasons of his career, but a very good season, especially as a guy off the bench. He will be 35 in July. Minor league deal for Adam Lind.
He's kind of Lucas Duda, but older and perhaps a little bit less durable if such a thing exists. And I'm surprised he only got a minor league deal. I figured some team would have signed him as their cheap DH or perhaps even first base solution because, you know, outside of that stint with Seattle, he's consistently hit right-handers. He's obviously not asking for the world in contract negotiations. And if you give him enough playing time, he's probably going to pop, you know, 15 to 20 home runs. So pretty surprised that this is all it took to get him. I don't really know how he fits in on the Yankees other than his, you know, a camp body in case something goes wrong. Or I don't know, I guess maybe they can try to sneak him onto their bench. But I think he should be someone starting or most days DH / first baseman at this point.
I think that's kind of the trick with him, though. Teams seem to want to use him super selectively. Like they never, ever, ever want him to see a left-handed pitcher.
Yeah.
And I think that complicates things for a lot of teams because everyone wants to run those tiny, tiny benches. And he ends up being maybe a little bit more of a crunch than Lucas Duda has been. But not that he should still be on a major league deal somewhere. But I'm guessing you see the Yankees basically run him out there in place of whatever they were going to do with Tyler Austin or maybe they send Clint Frazier down to get more actual playing time and work him in as the guy who comes in, you know, for a pinch hit. There's something they can do with him, but it's not going to be in the role. It's not going to be as predominant a role as he had with the Nationals last year, for sure.
It wouldn't surprise me at all if he makes the team to start the season and gets rolled off the roster as the team gets ready to bring up guys like Miguel Andujar or Gleyber Torres or, I don't know, maybe Frazier later, although I really don't know what's going to happen with Frazier to start the season because he seems to have no role on this team, especially with the concussion issues. I would be very, very surprised if he was anywhere other than AAA for the first half of the season. I do really like him as a aggressive pinch hit option for this team because this is a team that's got a little bit of flexibility in terms of they can have a lot of guys play a lot of different places. Drury can play all around the infield. Wade can play all around the infield. But their DH situation pretty much precludes him from getting a lot of DH at-bats, I think, because they have like five really good outfielders they want to roll through that position. So I would expect him to be like one of the best pinch hitters in the game. But just like you guys said, there's very little likelihood that he's going to be starting very often unless Greg Bird gets injured again, I think.
So Nick Cellini suggested this to me on Twitter. I think it made sense. Adam Lind is injury insurance for Greg Bird up until spring training ends, and then he just is off the roster. And this is essentially a tryout for him against major league pitching instead of going to the camp that they have down in Florida for free agents who haven't signed yet.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense to me. The other thing that I think it would be good is if he you know, since Adrian Gonzalez has been god awful this spring, that the Mets just reach out and offer to throw a, you know, an organizational piece the Yankees' way if that's their plan, and pick him up at the end of spring training because Adrian Gonzalez is awful.
I can see that. Just the Yankees got what they needed, another left-handed bat.
Right.
So the next one we have is Ichiro signing with the Seattle Mariners. You tagged it a little bit earlier, Brian, about how he has a shot to actually start. So does Ichiro start?
If you're going to me, I think he does only until Ben Gamel is healthy. But I think he's on the field for opening day. And I think that's going to be a really good thing. It's going to be a special moment. I don't think anybody's rooting against like Ichiro signing with the Mariners. Like, we don't know how much money they're paying him. It could be $20 million and people are going to be like, awesome deal. Great for the Mariners. Super. It's just good that he's going to, you know, likely finish out his career in Seattle. But as far as performance-wise goes, he's a nice fourth outfielder to have still. There's nothing wrong with him. And, you know, would you rather have him on the roster than Guillermo Heredia? Yeah, I would.
Can you name three healthy Mariners outfielders right now?
Trick question, they don't exist.
They do not.
I mean, D. Gordon is healthy, I assume, but other than that, I don't
know. Yeah, it's D. Gordon, Mitch Haniger, sort of. He kind of has a hand thing, but he's fine. And then...
I like your confidence in that. Yeah, you're fine.
Then it gets kind of murky, because, I mean, I don't consider Nelson Cruz an outfielder. I didn't know Andrew Roman was on this team. Taylor Motter and Guillermo Heredia. I'm pretty sure Heredia's hurt, and I don't know what the deal is with Taylor Motter. But
this is not an impressive depth chart at all. And
no.
I'm just going to say it, though. I think we're – this is Ichiro. Everyone loves Ichiro, but he's been very bad in most of his recent seasons, and I don't expect that to change. He's not good. I mean, let's not cherry coat it. If his name was anything but Ichiro Suzuki, we would be kind of laughing at the idea of them installing him in their lineup. And, you know, we talked about Mike Ford potentially being their first baseman. They're going to run out of a lineup that has Ford, Ichiro Suzuki, and, you know, who knows with Zunino if he's legit good now or not. You know, I don't know, man. This is a mess of a team. Mike Majarama was a guy they got in a minor league deal last year. He was a catcher in the Rays system who could not actually break into the majors, which is never a good sign. Never. And, yeah, Heredia can't hit. Roman can't hit. This is not going to be a – this is a team that honestly should be out there trying to get Lance Lynn or Alex Cobb, but – then you look at their lineup and you're like, well, maybe there's not much hope here after all.
I want to flash back to the fact that their fifth or sixth starter, Marco Gonzalez, was acquired so enthusiastically at the cost of Tyler O'Neill, who would it just doesn't make any sense at all, because he's like the Cardinals' sixth outfielder, but he would definitely be starting at this point for the Mariners. And I don't that trade still makes no sense.
I think Gonzalez might actually be able to out-hit Ichiro at this point.
Oh, man, that is harsh. This is a really harsh episode. I take full responsibility for a lot of this, but no, man, we are spitting fire today. Yeah, but I completely agree with all of this. The only guys that they've re-signed from last year in terms of free agents were Gordon Beckham and Hisashi Iwakuma, which is like,
woo!
Yay! that's a tough time to be a Mariners fan. But at the same time, you can also squint and see a team that could really hit if their starters stay healthy, which it so far seems like they can't. So, to be continued.
Yeah, I mean, if they're looking for a lefty bat, I understand Ichiro has the history there, but it's kind of curious they didn't make a run at like a Daniel Nava, or, I mean, even earlier in the offseason, a Curtis Granderson. If you're looking for an older guy to come in there, just kind of eat some innings and take some swings decently from the left side, kind of curious to me.
I just want to throw this out there, too. You know who else they could have gotten recently for a pretty low amount of prospects and money? Corey Dickerson, and he would have made this lineup look a lot better, I think, even with a healthy Ben Gamble. I mean, Ben Gamble is not standing in anyone's way. Let's not pretend he's not a starter on most other teams, right? I don't know if he'd be a starter on more than, what, two or three other teams at most, and I don't know. I don't want to insult him too much, but, you know, I don't know. This is not a good situation. This team is – I don't really know what they're trying to do. If you're trying to maximize the score, they've done a horrible job of that this winter, other than the D. Gordon trade. And if you're not trying to maximize the score, then maybe try to disassemble. I don't know. It's a messy situation.
I'm really hoping that after the Ichiro signing, they bring in Jose Bautista to be his platoon partner in the outfield.
That would be fun.
Could you imagine?
Yes.
I think they have a weird overemphasis on outfield defense. I think that's why Gamel and Motter and Heredia existed in the first place. Because if you put Corey Dickerson or, I don't know, almost anyone who can hit in left field, you suddenly have like a really good little outfield tandem in middle of the order with Haniger. I love Haniger. I think he's a really great player, and even though he's a little older for what they got. But, you know, you've got Haniger who Pakoda projects as a three-win player. You've got Gordon, who we know what he is. And then if you had an actual hitter in left field, you'd be in business.
Well,
we know.
Say,
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Brian. No, I was just going to say they're a very aesthetically pleasing team, even if they're not necessarily a good team, because Gordon and Segura could run like crazy. Kano has a beautiful swing. You know, you could even include Ichiro in this. And, yeah, it's aesthetically pleasing, even if they're going to lose, like, you know, 85-plus games potentially.
Except for Zunino. And the other thing that I was going to say is D. Gordon, right now, the reports out of spring training are that he is pretty much amazing as a center fielder already, which is really exciting. I'm really happy that that conversion seems to be going well so far, because I think D. Gordon, like, you know, plus defensive center fielder is a lot more fun than D. Gordon, second baseman, who makes me a little nervous sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, and if it works too, it's kind of, you kind of wonder why no one has tried it in the past with how fast he is. And I mean, if he just grabs it and goes like he does, I mean, interesting enough.
I think some of that is also the fact that it's not been very easy to find a good second baseman these days. So I do understand why teams were more willing to try him at second base, especially, you know, in places like Los Angeles and Miami.
So next we'll go to a guy that we've talked about before, and we just really love talking about. That's Ryan Schimpf to the Braves. I'm pretty sure the last time we brought up Ryan Schimpf on this podcast, one of y'all said not interesting, and we moved on in a second. So can we beat 1 second in the Ryan Schimpf analysis?
Oh man, can I beat 1 second in the Ryan Schimpf analysis?
Do we have a Schimpf fan on board now?
We have a Schimpf person who wants to see it in the same way. It's like, I wonder how long that car on fire can keep going. But I want to see just like how long someone can put him in the lineup and he can uppercut his way to, like, I mean, he was good for like almost a half a season for the Padres, and then he was the opposite of that for all of last year. But I'd be interested to see if he can maybe slot in at third some, be, God, they already have Charlie Culberson too. He can be like the
Charlie Culberson. Charlie Culberson was the centerpiece of that Matt Kemp, Adrian Gonzalez trade. Don't forget about Charlie Culberson.
Yeah, I mean, on the bright side, we know they're not going to play Ryan Schimpf at second base, which should never happen. So maybe he slots in at third some, gets some time as a bench bat, or, you know, plugs some left field holes before they bring up Acuna. I don't know, but
you mentioned the left field thing. I think he should be the starting left fielder, which is awful for the Braves. I mean, if they're not going to bring Acuna up to start the season, which, you know, yeah, I guess they're not going to, but like, he probably is their best option in left field, I think. RJ, what do you think?
Shoot, man. You're talking about a bunch of, I mean, what am I supposed to do here? Stand for Preston Tucker? Because I don't know if I'm willing to do that. And but Tucker did have some success initially once he reached the majors. So maybe they're going to run him out there. I don't know. They have Lane Adams too, who is kind of interesting in a sense. And yeah, I don't know. They have Johan Camargo, and I kind of hope they give him a chance at third base before they turn to Schimpf, because again, he had a decent season last year, and I'm curious to see if the power sticks or if that was an aberration, which if you look at his overall body of work, it seems like an aberration. But if you're the Braves and you're not going to bring in Mike Moustakas or a real third baseman, you might as well see if Camargo can repeat what he did last season. I don't think it's likely, but yeah.
If they wanted to make me happy, they would run in left field a Ryan Schimpf, Kurt Suzuki platoon.
Oh, brother. Okay, Brody. Hit Brody, go on to the next one. We're not going to entertain this.
We really want to go to the next one. Let's go to Rob Gross and right back to the White Sox bullpen.
Not interesting.
Hard pass.
Next one.
All right, so Danny Valencia, minor league deal with the Baltimore Orioles, kind of the same breath as Adam Lind in that he wasn't terrible last year. He wasn't good. Wasn't awful and probably deserved a lesser minor league deal, a lesser major league deal, right?
It was Danny Valencia, and I actually am surprised at how good he was, because they gave him 500 plate appearances and he posted a 95 OPS plus, which again is not good, but it's also not horrible, as Brody, the poet among us, dictated. And yeah, it's fine. The Orioles have a thing for you know, Pedro Alvarez, and I feel like Valencia. Hasn't Valencia been there before? Am I imagining that? Because I'm pretty sure he's been
there. He's been there. Yeah, he's been there.
He probably had like a astounding, like, 200 plate appearance run over them or something. I'm seemingly remembering that, but
this is almost exactly correct. He had 178 plate appearances where he homered 8 times, hit 304, 335, 553.
Amazing.
Yeah, so that's, he'll maybe get 150 to 200 plate appearances and he'll somehow hit way above his head. And next year he'll land as someone's first baseman, probably the Rays, you know, they're going to dump CJ Cron and be like, Danny Valencia, years of control or something nonsensical like that. Because I don't even think he has years of control left. The point is, this dude's not interesting. So
what is interesting is the Orioles, like, have signed 5 different guys who are just bad versions of Adam Lind when they could have just signed Adam Lind. But I think the Orioles' whole plan is to sign guys where they can go, ta-da, we made this guy better, when in fact it's just like their park.
But I did like the Colby Rasmus deal for them, though.
This is what I want to say about that. I think Rasmus Valencia platoon in, like, left or right field is actually really good.
Who's going to catch the balls that fly to left field?
I wouldn't worry about that too much.
Because they're going to have Trey Mancini out in left, right? Isn't Rasmus
– with him and Adam Jones and the pair of Rasmus and Valencia, it's going to be a terrible defensive outfield. But, man, that's a pretty cheap hitting option, right? I mean, if Rasmus is anything like he was before he left the game, and if Valencia hits anything like he did last year, that's like a really, really solid offensive corner outfielder between the two of them.
Yeah,
no, this is definitely how the Orioles go 500 in the first half and don't trade Machado and just keep plugging away at being the 5th best wild card contender.
Yeah, Reiser hates Baltimore. I was going to say they have Anthony Santander, the Rule 5 pick from Cleveland, also in camp, and he seems like he might open the season as their platoon option with Rasmus.
Yeah, he might, and that might be a better choice. And you know what else might be a better choice is just let Austin Hayes play, because he's really good.
I saw him last September, and I think he swung through or over every single off-speed pitch that was thrown his way, which that's not an insult to him, because he was probably – you know, he probably shouldn't have been in the majors at that point, or, you know, it was the end of a season, whatever. But I'm just saying that stuck with me is maybe he's not quite ready just yet. It could have been just one bad day, but I kept seeing him swing through every single breaking ball and off speed pitch, and it made me wonder.
I will say, I'm looking at Pakoda, and Pakoda has him down for a better true average than, like, Adam Jones and Tim Beckham and Jonathan. It has him down for a better true average than Jonathan Scope. Anyway, it thinks Austin Hayes is very good.
Yeah, I know a lot of the prospect evaluators at BP also think Austin Hayes is really good. So, RJ, you're out on an island for now, but time.
No. I'm not saying he's not very good. I'm just saying I'm not sure if he's very good right now. There's a difference there. And Santander, for the record, he's a guy who has power too. So, they're going to slug. They're not going to catch the ball, but they're going to slug.
Well, say they're not going to catch the ball. Like, even their bench, like, they've got Engel Vilma and Anthony Santander, but they've got, like, 6 NRI corner guys, like in Valencia and Pedro Alvarez and, I don't know, Joey Rickard. Like, you've got a lot of weird guys on. It's a weird roster, even with the NRIs.
It's the inverse of a Diamondbacks bench, which is going to be, like, Jeff Mathis. It's going to be, like, Daniel Descalso. It's going to have Jared Dyson and, you know, whoever else you want to plug in there. Probably Nick Ahmed, maybe. So that's like an all-glove bench, whereas this one is like the exact opposite of that.
See, here's the thing. With a rotation of Dylan Bundy, Andrew Cashner, Kevin Gausman, Chris Tillman, and Gabriel Noah, do you really have to worry about catching balls in left field when they're all going to fly over the fence anyway?
Jesus.
And game. Good job, Brody. You've officially owned the Orioles. You're now you've taken over for Peter Angelos as the owner of the Orioles.
But, I mean, honestly, when you have a staff that really has problems with the long ball, defense, I would assume, is less of a factor that you have to worry about, right?
Well, sort of. Like, if you believe that they're all going out of the park, yeah, you don't have to worry about it so much. But this is, like you said, it's a fly ball heavy heavy rotation. And if they're fly ball heavy, that means there's going to be a lot of balls that don't leave the park that are going to fall in between Trey Mancini and Adam Jones, I'm afraid.
So, Brian Kevin Segrist, I'm going to toss him to you. He's now with the Pirates.
This is a really good pickup, I think. As far as my, you know, all minor league guys are supposed to be good pickups because they don't cost you anything. But I think Segrist has a chance to come back out and be a decent left-hander in a real, like, good bullpen, not just the Pirates bullpen going forward. I really liked him for a lot of years when he was with St. Louis. And I think that he still has the stuff to have a chance at being, like, eventually making his way back to a seventh inning role. So good for the Pirates.
Yeah, he's been passed around a little bit here with the Phillies and now the Pirates, but I like it. It's fine. And the Pirates have a kind of interesting bullpen going on because, you know, they also have Jack Leversich there. They have someone else. His name is slipping my head. So they're going to have some interesting – and, you know, the Pirates still have not signed a big league free agent – excuse me, signed a free agent to a big league deal. So this is the kind of moves I guess they're going to rely on instead. I'm curious to see if they are able to fix Segrist because a few seasons ago he looked like he was going to have a 10-year career as a seventh inning guy.
My favorite random Pirates guy they picked up in the bullpen this offseason is Josh Smoker.
Oh, there you go. You are really hitting these. They're really going after these left-handers. You know, Smoker, who I think had some really good stints with the Mets over the last couple of years. Obviously, Felipe Rivera is the guy there. And now with Leathersich, you brought up another former Met who can really get some strikeouts. And Segrist. These are all guys who used to be high strikeout guys. And we'll see if they'll they'll be able to stick around for a little bit in on a major league level, which would be kind of interesting. You know what? Which guy who may end up in the bullpen that I really like that they got was Joe Musgrove, who is not good enough to be a starter for this team, in my opinion.
Really?
I am not a Joe Musgrove guy.
I think he'll be a starter for like a while.
I do too, but I don't think he'll be any good.
That is not what I meant.
No, I know that's not what you meant. I get nervous about Musgrove because his peripherals were so weird last year. I did a lot of research on him for the annual because I could not think of anything interesting to say about him at first. And his peripherals make me really nervous. He seems like the type of guy that analytics people might think, oh, he just needs to tweak this one thing and he'll get so much better. But I'm not sure the sum of the parts is going to make a good whole, I guess is the best way to put it.
Jairo Laborte, claimed by the A's after being waived by the Reds, who claimed him after being DFA'd by the Tigers. And as our notes say, and Brian so eloquently put it, who cares?
I mean, his name is the best part of him, Jairo Laborte. Yeah, he's a live arm lefty. He's going to get 1,000 chances. He can't throw strikes. So realistically, his best case scenario is ending up with the Pittsburgh Pirates before the end of the season.
That really does bring it all full circle. That's pretty good.
When you're discarded from the Reds bullpen.
Yeah.
And the Tigers, 40 man.
That's rough. I feel really bad for this guy because he had such a tough run of things in Detroit. He had 6 games, pitched 6 innings. He walked 7 guys. That's brutal. That just hurt.
Like anything can happen in 6 games, but that's the best situation.
Would you take him over Joe Musgrove?
No, of course not. I think Musgrove would actually be a very nice reliever. I just don't see him as being any good in the starting rotation. So I'm not anti Joe Musgrove like in general. I just feel like there was a lot of talk after the trade that Joe Musgrove was going to be a seamless replacement for the Pirates for Gerrit Cole on the Pirates. And I feel like that is silly.
That's insane. But could he be, you know, a decent number 3, maybe? I don't know. When you combine him and any steps forward from Chad Kuhl and Trevor Williams or maybe Tyler Glass now, you know, I think it's fine. I definitely don't think he's making up the difference on his own, though.
They also have, you know, Nick Kingham, the Royal Swine, as we call him, and the Miners. They have Holmes on the way. Excuse me. Is it Holmes? It is Holmes, right?
No, Mitch Keller.
No, Mitch Keller is he's the big prospect, but I think they have a guy named Holmes, too. Clay Holmes? Yeah, there you go.
Oh, Clay Holmes.
I kept wanting to call him Grant Holmes. I knew that wasn't right. But yeah, they have some pitching depth on the way. So it's an interesting team. I'm not really thrilled with their 2 trades this winter and their inactivity on the free agent market. But this seems like a 75 to 80 win team that if they get some good luck, could actually break 500 somehow. So, but you know what? It's not going to be because of Jairo Laborte.
No, no, for sure, because he doesn't play for them. So
not yet. Not yet.
Give it time.
Give it time. That's right.
All right, so Brian, that's our list. So anything else you got?
No, no. I think we covered quite a bit of stuff. I think that we wanted to mention briefly. We did skip over Danny Salazar, who's going to be missing the first part of the season. It looks like at least he won't be in the rotation for the Indians to start the season, which opens up the door for Mike Clevinger podcast concern, Mike Clevinger personal concern, Mike Clevinger. I'm excited to see Clevinger get the start, start the season in the starting rotation for the Indians. Is anybody else excited about this, or is this just me?
I think he's legitimately good.
Thank you. I wish he'd get a haircut. Zach can come back.
Zach is allowed back on.
How about you, RJ? Do you like Clevinger?
Yeah, he's fine. But, you know, the hair, Brian. You know I have a thing with the hair. And I,
look,
for the most part, I don't really trust Lakota as much as I trust a good hairline test analysis. You know, if you got a good hairline, it's like good face to me. You know, you can see who's the real ones from the fake ones just based on their hair. And that's why I'm not really that confident that Brendan McKay is going to be great, because he went out there with that weird dyed haired look. And frankly, that screams bust to me, Brian. So it's very scientific. You have to appreciate it.
I appreciate your scientific look at this team and at this haircut. This is really the next level of sabermetrics. You thought Rob Arthur's crack of the bat analysis was interesting. Let me tell you, if Jacob deGrom has a really rough season after chopping his locks off a la Samson, we'll have some real data to go on for this. But I think this is the next big thing for you at CBS Sports, RJ.
I got, you know what it's called, right? You're going to love this one. Save Arbor Metrics.
So I'd like to thank everybody for listening. If you made it through that, I'm extremely proud of you. Zach, thank you so much for joining us as a guest today. We love having you on.
Anytime.
And RJ, Sean, thank you for putting up with me for yet another week. Even not as a special guest, you actually willingly sign up for this regularly. So I don't quite know what's wrong with you, but I appreciate it very much.
I mean, Kreiser's the only respectable one here. We all know that.
This is true.
Yeah, but you know, you show up on the show too many times and you lose that respectability very quickly. Yeah. So
yeah. Going down the drain.
Good luck with that. You can read more of Zach at Baseball Prospectus. Zach, is there anywhere else where you're writing right now?
I pop up at MLB.com occasionally, but just go to my Twitter feed. I tweet probably too much of everything I write, so you'll find it.
That is true of literally everybody on Twitter, so that is a solid recommendation. RJ, as usual, we can find you at CBS Sports. Anything you'd like to plug?
No, we're doing season previews, so if you want to come see more thoughts on the A's and they stuck me with the Rays. So if you want to see me rant about the Rays some more, this time in text, feel free to check that out in the coming days.
And speaking of season previews, Zach and I are collaborating on the first of the season previews for Baseball Prospectus. You'll be able to read that sometime this week. We previewed the Marlins, which everybody wants to read more about how bad the Marlins are. So that's going to be a fun one. But actually, since Zach is writing half of it, it's going to be pretty good. And also, we've got a whole slate of those season previews that are coming out on Baseball Prospectus leading up to the start of the season. So that's fun stuff.
That is fun.
So thank you all for listening, and we will see you guys next time.